Welcome back to the Spoken Wood Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Vangelist, and for today's episode, we have an article that was written and recorded for us by Bob Rosieski of the Logan Cabinet Shop. It's titled, Handwork, Efficiency, and Mindset, and was originally posted June 7, 2011. Now to find more great posts like today's, visit the Logan Cabinet Shop at logancabinetshop.com/blog, and that's shop with two P's and an E. And of course, as always, I'll have links in the show notes to get you there that much quicker. So without further delay, let's get on with the show.
So you have the tools. You've carefully selected your material. You've studied the traditional joinery, and you understand how to use it. Now it's time to get to work. But before you put a first-class hurting on that carefully selected board, take a minute to get focused. To work efficiently with hand tools, we need to get into a hand tool mindset. This isn't about Zen meditation or being one with the tool. That might make you feel all warm and fuzzy about using hand tools, but it isn't going to get the job done any more efficiently. No, what I'm talking about here is a mindset about how to do the work. Let me back up a minute. When most of us got our first taste of woodworking, it's very likely that there was a process that we were introduced to. That process probably involved some precision or maybe not so precision machines, a tape measure, and a set of dimension plans with an accurate cut list. All we had to do was dimension all the stock accurately according to the cut list, and then put the whole thing together. Of course, there's a little more to it than that, but you get the general idea. This process is a mindset. It's an idea about the order of operations, or a set of assumptions, if you will. For example, all of the stock will be dimensioned to exactly 3/4 of an inch thick. All of the drawer dividers will be exactly 2 inches wide. The backboards will all be 1/2 inch thick and 6 inches wide. The plans you're working from are drawn to incorporate these exact dimensions. Deviate from the plan, and things just won't go together correctly. Not to worry, though. The machines make obtaining all of these standard dimensions a snap. Just run all your stock through the planer a few times, and all your stock will be 3/4 of an inch thick. Set up the fence in your table saw to run the drawer dividers through, and they'll all be exactly 2 inches wide. Put a stop block on the chop saw, and you get unlimited parts all cut to exactly the same length. This is the mindset of someone who works primarily with machines. I've been there. In the machine mindset, it's very common to dimension all the parts first, before cutting any joinery, because you don't want to lose the machine setting. For folks like me that were introduced to woodworking through the use of machines, it can be a challenge to make the switch to hand tools and still work efficiently. The difficulty, however, is not really in learning to use the tools. There's certainly a learning curve to developing skills with hand tools. Still, with just a little practice, I believe most people can learn to do a respectable job in fairly short order. What takes more time and effort to come to terms with is the change in mindset that's necessary in order to work efficiently with hand tools. Keep in mind here that I'm emphasizing working efficiently. It's certainly possible to follow the exact same order of operations discussed above for machine work, but using hand tools. However, if you go this route, prepare for a very slow process. In fact, I think this is the number one reason that hand tools get the bad reputation of being slow. They're being used for machine operations, and subsequently compared to a machine for that operation. Machines will always win with this approach. The solution is a change in mindset. Changing one's ideas about how things should be designed and built can be a challenging proposition. We need to unlearn what we've learned up to now. This is where folks just starting out and deciding to go it with hand tools have a distinct advantage. They have no preconceived notions about the process. I think this is one of the reasons that newcomers often have an easier time picking up hand tool skills compared to seasoned machine pros. However, regardless of one's experience, learning to think like a hand tool user can greatly increase one's efficiency with hand tools, and maybe even machines. I'll even go so far as to claim that many one-off pieces can be constructed with hand tools at machine-type speeds with the proper mindset. So with that in mind, let's look at a few strategies that can be used to improve our efficiencies with our hand tools. First, use wide boards. There's a nasty myth that has plagued woodworkers for years that claims that a panel glued up from narrower boards is more stable than one glued up from wide boards. Well, this is just plain silly. Wood moves in two primary directions: tangentially, or parallel to the growth rings, and radially, or perpendicular to the growth rings. Tangential movement is proportionally greater than radial movement for any given species of wood. This is what causes flat-sawn boards to cup. The board expands and contracts parallel to the growth rings more than it does perpendicular to the growth rings. This proportion does not change with the width of the board or the way it was sawn. Therefore, regardless of whether a panel is glued up from 2 9-inch wide boards or 6 3-inch wide boards, the boards in that panel are going to move a certain percent tangentially and a certain percent radially, equating to the exact same amount of tangential and radial movement in both panels, provided all the boards were sawn the same way. So the theory that the panel glued up from narrower boards is more stable is bogus. The common practice of using narrower boards and alternating the growth rings in the glue-up also does not result in a more stable panel. All this practice results in is a panel that develops a wave of alternate cupping instead of a cup in a single direction. Using wide boards is advantageous to the hand tool user. It takes just about as long to dress the face of a 4-inch wide board as it does to dress the face of a 12-inch wide board. So by making your panels from wider boards, you save time. Furthermore, in my opinion, panels glued up from a bunch of narrow boards look terrible. Nothing says IKEA like a tabletop glued up from a bunch of 2 to 3-inch wide strips. Finally, since hand tools have no width capacities, there's no limit to how wide of a board you can work with. Many old pieces used single wide board case sides and tops, and they still are intact today. If we choose our lumber and grain patterns carefully, there's no reasons we can't do the same. Number 2. Don't plane to standard thickness. Using a power thickness planer, it's easy peasy to plane all your stock to a consistent 3/4 inch thick, whether it needs to be or not. With hand tools, it's a lot of sweaty work. Well, what if I told you that you didn't have to do it? Feel a little better now? It's important when making the mindset change to really ask the question, why? Planing all of your parts to a standard thickness is one of the first whys a hand tool user should ask. Unfortunately, it's usually so ingrained in our skulls by published plans that it's a difficult habit to break. Here's the thing. Rarely in handwork is planing all parts to a standard thickness absolutely necessary. Is anyone really going to notice that your tabletop is 13/16 inch thick and not 7/8 inch thick? What about those drawer fronts? Do they all really need to be the same thickness? If one is 3/4 inch, another is 13/16 inch, and the third is 7/8 inch, will it really matter? Adjacent boards for a panel glue-up need to be a consistent thickness, but do both panels for two separated case sides, say, need to be the same thickness? Is anyone really going to notice that one side of the case is 1/16 inch thicker than the other? Probably not. So why do it? Number 3. Just plane the money side. The phrase, turn your face to London, describes this tactic perfectly. The gist of it is that every surface need not be a stunningly tear-out-free show-finished surface. Areas like case backs, backs of table aprons, undersides of drawer bottoms, undersides of table or case tops, etc., don't need to be planed to the degree that a tabletop would. Heck, they may not even need to be planed at all. As an example, for a table apron, one could just plane the outward face and the bottom edge. All the joinery would be marked referencing these two faces. Then, once the table was assembled, the top of the apron could be planed flush with the tops of the legs, and the back of the apron could be left rough. No one would ever know. Look at the non-show surfaces of old furniture, and you'll see this was a common practice. Number 4. Don't shoot. Shooting boards are a popular shop appliance for squaring up the ends of stock. They do a wonderful job of it, too. However, the more pieces I build completely by hand, the less I find myself reaching for my shooting board. It's not because I can saw so squarely and cleanly, but because the ends of pieces often just don't need to be square. A table apron is a good example. The shoulders of the tenons need to be square, but the ends of the tenons don't. When the apron is cut to length, there's no need to shoot the ends square. Mark the tenon shoulders with a square and leave the tenon ends alone, and you've saved valuable time by not performing an unnecessary task. Number 5. Saw to the line. This is a no-brainer. If you saw your joinery, such as dovetails or tenons, fat of the line, and then clean up the surfaces with a shoulder plane or a paring chisel, you waste a lot of time tuning the fit. It does take some practice to get the hang of this one and gain confidence in your sawing abilities, but I can assure you it is time very well spent. Don't be afraid of miscuts. They're going to happen. Fix them. It's still faster than having to adjust the fit of every tail or every tenon. The more you do it, the better you'll get at it, and the less fixing and fitting you'll have to do. This tactic alone can save you hours, literally. Number 6. Use the right tool and set it up correctly. No tool will make you a better woodworker. However, the right tool, properly set up, can make you a more efficient woodworker. Joints like rabbets, dados, and grooves can be made with a saw and a chisel and cleaned up with a router plane. It's not very efficient, though. Having the right tool makes these joints much more efficient to cut. For rabbets, use a proper rabbet plane. For dados, a proper dado plane. For grooves, use a plow plane. Most importantly, set the tools up correctly. These tools were designed to work fast. They're not smoothers, they're jack planes, so set them up that way, minus the cambered iron, of course. They should be set up to take a relatively thick cut and remove material quickly. You shouldn't have to make 100 passes with the plane to make a rabbet. It's a job that should be done in a matter of seconds, not minutes. The same goes for other tools. You can surface the face of a board with a smooth plane set up for a 1/1000th inch thick shaving, but you'll be there all week. Get a floor plane and a triplane. Cheap ones are okay for this work. It's not the final show finish, or may not be a show surface at all. Set them up with the proper camber and depth of cut, and do the job efficiently. It can be challenging to change mindsets once we get used to doing things a certain way. But if we strive to be more efficient, or at least learn how our ancestors were able to do it, changing mindsets isn't an option. We as hobbyists cannot think like production machine shop woodworkers if we want to be efficient. I'm not romanticizing period woodworkers either. I certainly wouldn't want to work in the conditions they did, for the wages they did, with the health care they did. I like my teeth, and ibuprofen is my friend. We don't study period woodworkers and period techniques because we want to be them or live like them. We study them because we want to learn from them. So much has been lost in 300 years that in order to learn a lot of what they knew, we have to recreate their work with their tools in order to figure it out for ourselves. Their work is a benchmark for efficiency. They were good at it. We can be too, but we have to learn from the works that they've left behind. Producing furniture that looks like it came off a machine will always be more efficiently done using machines. To be more efficient with our hand tools, we need to think differently. Only then can we begin to understand the secrets to the efficiency of our ancestors. One more thing. Here's some food for thought for the majority of woodworkers who are using a mix of hand and power tools. The tactics that our ancestors used to be more efficient aren't just applicable to hand tool only guys like me. There's no reason some of these tactics couldn't be applied to machine work as well.